This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents The Bridge Kingdom, Book 1 of the Bridge Kingdom series, written by Danielle L. Jensen, performed by Lauren Fortgang and James Patrick Cronin.
Laura rested her elbows on the low sandstone wall, her eyes fixed on the glowing sun descending over the distant mountain peaks. Nothing between here and there but scorching sand dunes, scorpions, and the occasional lizard. Impassable for anyone without a good camel, the correct provisions, and a healthy dose of luck. Not that she hadn't been tempted to try more than once. A gong was struck, the reverberations echoing over the compound. It had called her to dinner every night for the last 15 years, but tonight, it rattled through her like a war drum. Laura took a deep breath to steady her nerves, then turned, striding across the training yard in the direction of the towering palms, her rose-colored skirts whispering against her legs. All 11 of her half-sisters were converging on the same place, each of them dressed in a different gown, the color carefully selected by their mistress of aesthetics to complement their features. Laura detested pink, but no one had asked for her opinion. After 15 years caged within the compound, tonight was to be the sisters' last here together, and their master of meditation had ordered them to spend the hour before dinner in a favored location, contemplating all they had learned and all they would accomplish with the tools they'd been given. Or at least, what one of them would accomplish. The scent of the oasis drifted over Laura on the faintest of breezes. The smell of fruits and leafy things, the char of cooking meat, and above all, water. Precious, precious water. The compound was located on one of the few springs in the midst of the Red Desert, but far off caravan routes. Isolated. Secret. Just the way their father, the king of Maradrina, liked it. And from what she'd been told about him, he was a man who always got what he wanted one way or another. Pausing at the edge of the training yard, Laura brushed the bottoms of her feet against her calves, dusting off the sand before sliding on delicate, high-heeled sandals, her balance as steady as though she wore combat boots. Click, click, click. Her heels echoed the frantic beat of her heart as she walked down the pathway of mosaic tile and crossed the small bridge. The faintest sound of stringed instruments rising above the gurgle of water. The musicians had arrived with her father's entourage to provide the entertainment for tonight's festivities. She doubted they'd be making the return journey. A bead of sweat trickled down her back, the strap holding a knife against her inner thigh, already damp. "You will not die tonight," she silently chanted. "Not tonight." Laura and her sisters converged on the center of the oasis, a courtyard encircled by the spring, which turned it into an island of greenery. They walked toward the enormous table, draped with silk and heavy with the silverware required for the dozen or more courses waiting in the wings. Servants, all of them mute, stood behind the 13 chairs, eyes fixed on their feet. As the women approached, they drew the chairs back, and Laura sat without looking, knowing the rose-colored cushion would be beneath her. None of the sisters spoke. Underneath the table, Laura felt a hand grip hers. She allowed her eyes to flick to her left, briefly meeting Sarhina's gaze, before returning to her plate. All 12 of them were the king's daughters, now 20 years of age, each born by a different one of his wives. They'd been brought to this secret place to undergo training that no Maradrinian girl had ever before received. Training that was now complete. Laura's stomach twisted sour, and she dropped Sarhina's hand. The feel of her closest sister's skin, cool and dry relative to her own, making her want to be sick. The gong sounded again, and the musicians went silent as the girls rose to their feet. A heartbeat later, their father appeared, his silver hair gleaming in the lamplight as he traversed the path toward them, his azure eyes identical to those of every girl present. Sweat ran in rivulets down Laura's legs, even as her training had her take in every detail. the indigo of his coat, the worn leather of his boots, the sword belted at his waist. And as he turned to walk around the table, the faintest outline of the blade hidden along his spine. When he sat, Laura and her sisters followed suit, none of them making a sound.
Daughters,
leaning back in his chair, Silas Veliant, the king of Meridrina, smiled, waiting for his taster to nod, then took a long mouthful of wine. All of them mirrored the motion, but Laura barely tasted the crimson liquid as it crossed her tongue.
You are my most prized of possessions, he said, waving his glass to encompass them all. Of the 20 of my progeny who were brought here, you are all that survive. That you do, that you thrive, is an achievement. For the training you've received would have been a test for the best of men, and you are not men.
It was only that very training that kept Laura from narrowing her eyes, from showing any emotion at all.
All of you were brought here so that I might determine which of you is best, which of you will be my knife in the dark, which of you will become queen of Ithacana.
His eyes had all the compassion of one of the scorpions in the desert.
Which of you will fracture Ithacana's defenses, and in doing so, allow Meridrina to return to its former glory?
Laura nodded once, all of her sisters doing the same. There was no anticipation, at least not for their father's choice. It had been made many days ago, and Mary Lynn sat at the opposite end of the table, her golden hair braided like a crown at her brow, her dress lamé to match. Mary Lynn had been the obvious choice, brilliant, gracious, beautiful as the sunrise, and as alluring as the sunset. No, the anticipation was for what would come next. The choice had been made as to who would be offered to the crown prince, king now, of the kingdom of Ithacana. What remained unknown was what would become of the rest of them. They were of royal blood, and that made them worth something. All the sisters, Mary Lynn included, had gathered close on a pile of pillows the last two nights, each of them speculating as to their fates. To whom of the king's viziers might they be wed? To which other realms might they be offered as brides? Neither the man nor the kingdom mattered. What every girl cared about was that it would be freedom from this place. But all those long nights, Laura had rested on the outskirts, offering nothing, using the time to watch her sisters, to love them, to remember how she had fought each of them as often as she had hugged them tight, their smiles, their eyes, the way, even past childhood, they nestled together like a pile of puppies newly away from their mother. Because Laura knew what the others did not, that their father intended for only one sister to leave the compound, and that would be the future queen of Ithacana. A salad garnished with cheese and vibrant fruit was placed before her, and Laura ate mechanically. You will live. You will live. You will live, she chanted to herself.
For as long as memory, Ithacana has placed a stranglehold on trade, making kingdoms and breaking them like it were some dark god.
Her father addressed them, his eyes flaring bright.
My father, and his father, and his father before him all sought to break the bridge kingdom. With assassins, with war, with blockades, with every tool at their disposal. But not one of them thought to use a woman.
He smiled slyly.
Meridrinian women are soft. They are weak. They are good for nothing more than keeping house and raising children, except for you 12.
Laura didn't blink. None of her sisters did. And she wondered for a breath whether he realized that every one of them was considering stabbing him in the heart over the insult of his words. He should know well that every one of them was capable of doing it. Her father continued.
15 years ago, the king of Ithacana demanded a bride for his son and heir as tribute, as payment.
His lip curled up in a sneer.
The bastard is a year dead, but his son has called in his due, and Maradrina is ready.
His eyes went to Marilyn, then to the servants moving to clear the salad plates. In the shadows of the growing night, Laura sensed movement, felt the presence of the mass of soldiers her father had brought with him. The servants reappeared with steaming bowls of soup, the scent of cinnamon and leeks drifting ahead of them.
Ithacana's greed, its hubris, its contempt for you, will be its downfall.
Laura allowed her eyes to leave her father's face, taking in each one of her sisters. With all their training, all their knowledge of his plans, he never intended for any of them, save his chosen one, to live an hour past this dinner. The soups were placed before each of them, and every one of her sisters waited for their father's taster to take the first mouthful and nod. Then they all picked up their spoons and dutifully began to eat. Laura did the same. Their father believed that brilliance and beauty were the most important attributes in the daughter he'd select. That she be the girl who'd shown the most acumen for combat and strategy, the girl who'd shown the most talent in the arts of the bedroom. He'd thought he'd known which traits mattered most, but he'd forgotten one. Sarhina stiffened next to her. "I'm sorry," Laura silently whispered to her sisters. Then Sarhina's body began to spasm. "I pray that you'll all find the freedom you deserve." The soup spoon in Sarhina's hand went flying across the table, but none of the other girls noticed. None of them cared. Because all of them were choking, foam rising to their lips as they twitched and gasped, one by one falling forward or backward or to the side. Then all of them were resting motionless. Laura set her spoon next to her empty bowl, looking once to Marilyn, who was face down in her dish. Rising, she rounded the table, lifting her sister's head from the bowl and carefully cleaning away the soup before resting Marilyn's cheek against the table. When Laura looked up again, her father was pale-faced and on his feet, sword half-drawn. The soldiers who'd been lurking in the wings had rushed forward, corralling the panicked servants into place, but everyone was staring at her. "You were mistaken in your choice, father." Laura stood tall as she addressed her king. She stared him down, allowing the dark, grasping, and selfish part of her soul to climb to the surface and stare out at him. "I will be the next queen of Ithacana, and I will bring the Bridge Kingdom to its knees." Laura had known what would come next, but it seemed to happen so very quickly, and yet she was certain every detail would be burned into her mind until the day she died. Her father slammed his sword back into its sheath, then reached down to press his fingers against the throat of the nearest girl, holding them there for several moments while Laura watched impassively. Then he nodded once at the soldiers surrounding them. The men who'd been intended to dispatch Laura and her sisters turned their swords instead on the servants, whose tongueless mouths uttered wordless screams as they tried to flee the massacre. The musicians were cut down, as were the cooks in the distant kitchens, and the maids turning down the sheets on beds that would never be slept in again. Soon, all who remained were the king's loyal cadre of soldiers, their hands coated with the blood of their victims. Through this, Laura remained still. Only the knowledge that she was the sole remaining daughter, that she was the last horse left to bet on, kept her from fighting her way free of the carnage and fleeing into the desert beyond. Eric, the master of arms, approached through the palms, blade glistening in his hand. His eyes went from Laura to her sister's still forms, and he gave her a sad smile.
"I'm not surprised to find you still standing, little cockroach."
It was the endearment he'd bestowed upon her when she'd arrived, 5 years old and barely alive, thanks to a sandstorm that had befallen her party on their trek to the compound.
"Ice and fire might ravage the world, but still the cockroach survives," he'd said.
Just like you.
Cockroach she might be, but that she still breathed was thanks to him. Eric had dispatched her to the training yard as punishment for a minor transgression 2 nights prior, and she'd overheard members of her father's cadre plotting the deaths of her and her sisters, a conversation led by Eric himself. Her eyes burned as she regarded him, the man who'd been more of a father to her than the silver-haired monarch to her right. But she'd said nothing, gave him not so much as a smile in return.
Is it done? Her father asked.
Eric nodded.
All have been silenced, Your Majesty. Save myself.
Then his eyes flicked to the shadows not touched by the table's lamps.
And the magpie.
From those shadows stepped her master of intrigue, and Laura coolly regarded the wisp of a man who had orchestrated every aspect of the evening.
The girl did most of the dirty work for you.
Laura should have been your choice all along.
Eric's voice was toneless, but grief filled his eyes as they passed over the fallen girls before returning to Laura's face. Laura wanted to reach for her knife. How dare he grieve them when he'd done nothing to save them? But 1,000 hours of training commanded her not to move. He bowed to his king.
For Moradrina.
Then he pulled his knife across his own throat. Laura clenched her teeth, the contents of her stomach rising, bitter and foul and full of the same poison she'd given her sisters. Yet she didn't look away, forcing herself to watch as Eric slumped to the ground, blood pulsing from his throat in great gouts until his heart went still. The magpie stepped around the pool of blood, coming fully into the light.
Such dramatics.
Magpie wasn't his real name, of course. It was Saren. And of all the men and women who'd trained the sisters over the years, he was the only one who'd come and gone from the compound at his leisure, managing the king's network of spies and plots.
He was a good man, a loyal subject.
There was no inflection in her father's voice, and Laura wondered if he meant the words, or if they were for the benefit of the soldiers watching the proceedings. Even the most stalwart loyalty had its limits, and her father was no fool. The magpie's narrow eyes turned on her.
Laura, as you know, Majesty, was not my first choice. She scored near the bottom in nearly all things, with the lone exception of combat. Her temper continually gets the better of her. Marilyn,
he gestured to her sister,
was the obvious choice, brilliant and beautiful, masterfully in control of her emotions, as she clearly demonstrated over the past several days.
Everything he said about Marilyn was true, but it wasn't the sum of her. Unbidden memories flooded through Laura's mind, visions of her sister carefully caring for a runt kitten, which was now the fattest cat in the compound. Of how she'd listened quietly to any of her sister's troubles, then offer the most perfect advice. Of how, as a child, she'd given names to all the servants because she'd thought it cruel that they should have none. Then the visions cleared, leaving only a still body before her, golden hair crusted with soup. My sister was kind. Laura turned her head back to her father, her heart skittering in her chest even as she challenged him. The future queen of Ithacana must seduce its ruler, make him believe she is guileless and sincere. She must make him trust her, even as she uses her position to learn his every weakness, right up to the moment she betrays him. Marilyn was not that woman. Her father's eyes were unblinking as he studied her, and he gave the faintest nod of approval.
But you are.
I am.
Her pulse roared in her ears, her skin clammy despite the heat.
You are not often wrong, Saren, her father said. But in this, I believe you were mistaken, and fate has intervened in order to rectify that mistake.
The master of intrigue stiffened, and Laura wondered if he was now realizing that his own life hung in the balance.
as you say, Majesty. It seems Laura possesses a quality that I'd not considered in my testing.
The most important quality of all, ruthlessness.
The king studied her for a moment before turning back to the magpie.
Ready the caravan. We ride for Ithacana tonight.
Then he smiled at her as though she were the most precious of things.
It's time for my daughter to meet her future husband.
Flames licked the night sky as the group departed, but Laura only risked one backward glance at the burning compound that had been her home. The blood-spattered floors and walls blackening as the fire consumed all evidence of a plot 15 years in the making. Only the heart of the oasis, where the dinner table sat encircled by the spring, would remain untouched. It was still almost more than she could bear to leave her slumbering sister surrounded by a ring of fire, unconscious and helpless, until the concoction of narcotics she'd given them wore off. Already their pulses, which had been slowed to near death for a dangerous length of time, would be quickening, their breathing obvious to anyone who looked closely. For Laura to find excuses to linger to ensure their safety would only risk discovery, and then all of this would be for naught. Don't burn them. Leave them for the scavengers to pick their bones clean, she'd told her father, her stomach twisting into knots until he'd laughed and acceded to her macabre request, leaving her sisters slumped over the table, the slaughtered servants forming a gory perimeter around them. That was what her sisters would wake to, fire and death. For only if their father believed them silenced did they have any chance at a future. She would carry their mission forward, while her sisters made their own lives, now free to be masters of their own fates. She'd explained all of it in the note she'd slipped into Sarhina's pocket while her father ordered the compound swept for survivors. For no one must be left alive who might whisper a word about the deception that now journeyed toward a wedding in Ithacana. Their journey across the Red Desert would be fraught with hardship and peril. But at that precise moment, Laura was convinced the worst part would be listening to the magpies chatter the entire way. Laura's mare was laden with Marilyn's trousseau, while Laura was forced to ride Pillion behind the master of intrigue.
From this moment forward, you must be the perfect Maridrinian lady, he instructed, his voice grinding on her nerves. We cannot risk anyone seeing you behave otherwise, not even those His Majesty believes loyal.
He cast a meaningful glance toward her father's guards, who'd formed the caravan with practiced ease. Not a single one of them looked at her. They did not know what she was, what she'd been trained to do, what her purpose was beyond the fulfillment of a contract with the enemy kingdom. But every one of them believed she'd murdered her sisters in cold blood, which made her wonder how long her father would allow them to live.
How did you do it?
Hours into their journey, the magpie's question pulled Laura from her thoughts, and she tightened her white silk scarf across her face, despite the fact his back was to her. Poison.
Aren't we bold now that we believe we are untouchable?
She ran her tongue over her dry lips, feeling the heat of the sun rising behind them. Then she allowed herself to slip into the pool of calm her master of meditation had taught her to employ when strategizing, among other things.
I poisoned the soup spoons.
How? You didn't know where you'd be seated.
I poisoned them all, save those set at the head of the table.
The magpie was silent.
Laura continued. I've been taking small doses of several poisons for years to build up my tolerance.
Even still, Laura had purged herself the moment she'd had a chance, vomiting again and again until her stomach was dry. Then taking the antidote, the dizzying malaise the only lingering sign she'd ingested a narcotic at all. The master of intrigue's tiny frame tensed.
What if the settings had been altered? You might have killed the king.
She clearly believed it worth the risk.
Laura tilted her head, having noted the jingle of bells on the horse's bridle as her father had ridden up behind, the creature festooned with silver rather than the tin the guards' mounts wore.
"You guessed that I intended to kill the girls I didn't need," he said. "But instead of warning your sisters or attempting to escape, you murdered them to take the chosen place. Why?"
Because for the girls to fight their way out would have meant a lifetime on the run. Faking their deaths had been the only way. "I may have spent my life in isolation, Father, but the tutors you selected educated me well. I know the hardship that our people endure beneath Ithacana's yoke on trade. Our enemy needs to be brought low. And of my sisters, I was the only one capable of doing it."
"Ha! You murdered your sisters for the good of our country."
"Hardly. I murdered them because I wished to live.
You gambled with the king's life in order to save your own skin." Saren turned to look at her, his expression green.
He'd trained her, which meant it was within the king's right to blame him for all that she had done. And her father was known to be merciless.
"Gambled and won!"
Reaching over, the king of Maradrina pushed aside Laura's scarf to cup her cheek.
"King Orin won't see you coming until it's far too late, a black widow in his bed."
King Orin of Ithacana. Orin, her soon-to-be husband. Laura only vaguely heard her father give the order to his guards to make camp, the group intending to sleep through the heat of the day. One of the guards lifted her off the back of Saren's camel, and she sat on a blanket while the men set up the camp, using the time to think of what was to come. Laura knew as much, probably more, than most Maradrinians did about Ithacana. It was a kingdom as shrouded in mystery as it was in mist. A series of islands stretching between two continents, the land masses guarded by violent seas made more treacherous by defenses the Ithacanians had placed in the waters to prevent anyone from infiltrating their lands. But that was not what made Ithacana so powerful. It was the bridge stretching above and between those islands, the only safe way to travel between the continents 10 months out of the year. And Ithacana used its asset to keep the kingdoms who depended on trade hungry, desperate, and most of all, willing to pay any price the bridge kingdom demanded for its services. Seeing her tent was erected, Laura waited until the men had placed her bags inside before slipping into the welcome shade, curbing the urge to thank them as she passed. She was alone for barely the length of time it took to remove her scarf before her father ducked inside, Saren on his heels.
"I'll have to begin training you on the codes now," the master of intrigue said, waiting until the king was sitting before ensconcing himself in front of Laura. "Mary Lynn created this code, and I dare say that teaching it to you in such a short time will be a challenge."
"Mary Lynn is dead," she replied, taking a mouthful of tepid water from her canteen before carefully closing it again.
"Don't remind me."
Her smile was filled with a confidence she didn't feel. "Come to terms with the fact that I am all who remains of the girls you trained, and then I will not need to refresh your memory."
"Begin,"
her father commanded, and then he closed his eyes, his presence in her tent for propriety's sake only. Saren began his instruction on the code. It needed to be entirely committed to memory, as she couldn't bring notes into Ithacana. It was a code she might never even use, its usefulness entirely predicated on the king of Ithacana allowing her the kindness of corresponding with her family. And kindness, she'd been told, was not an attribute the man was known for.
"As you know, the Ithacanians are exemplary codebreakers, and anything you manage to send out will be subject to intense scrutiny. There's every chance they'll break this one."
Laura held up her hand, ticking off her fingers as she spoke. "I should expect to be completely isolated, from both the Ithacanians and from the outside world. I may or may not be allowed to correspond. And even if I am, there is every chance our code will be broken. There is no way for you to reach me to retrieve a message. No way for me to send something through their people, because you've yet to swing the loyalties of a single one. She balled her hand into a fist. Other than escaping, which means an end to my ability to spy, just how do you expect me to convey the information to you?
If this were an easy task, we'd have accomplished it already.
Saren extracted a heavy piece of parchment from his satchel.
There is only one Ithacanian who corresponds with the outside world, and that is King Arryn himself.
Taking the parchment, which was embossed with Ithacana's crest of the curving bridge, the edges trimmed with gilt, she examined the precise script, which requested that Maradrina deliver a princess to be his bride in accordance with the terms of the 15-year treaty, as well as an invitation to negotiate new terms of trade between the kingdoms. You want me to hide a message within one of his? He nodded, handing her a jar of clear liquid. Invisible ink.
We'll attempt to entice messages from him to give you the opportunity, but he's not prone to frequent correspondence. For that reason, we should return to studying your sister's code.
The lesson was tedious work, and Laura was exhausted. It took all her self-control not to sigh with relief when Saren finally departed to his own tent. Her father rose, yawning. "Might I ask a question, Your Majesty?" she asked before he could depart. At his nod, she licked her lips. "Have you seen him? The new king of Ithacana?"
"No one has seen him. They wear masks always when meeting with outsiders."
Then her father shook his head.
"But I have met him once. Years ago, when he was only a child."
Laura waited, her palms soaking the silk of her skirts beneath them.
"He is rumored to be even more ruthless than his father before him, a harsh man who shows no mercy to outsiders."
His gaze met hers, and the uncharacteristic pity in his eyes made her hands turn to ice.
"I feel he will treat you cruelly, Laura."
"I have been trained to endure pain. Pain and starvation and solitude. Everything that she could possibly face in Ithacana. Taught to endure it and remain true to her mission."
"It may not come in the form of pain as you understand it."
Her father took her hand and turned it over to reveal her palm, studying it.
"Be wary, most of all, of their kindness, Laura. For above all, the Ithacanians are cunning. And their king will give up nothing without demanding his due."
Her heart skipped.
"The heart of our kingdom is caught between the Red Desert and the Tempest Seas, with Ithacana's bridge the only safe route beyond," he continued. "Neither desert nor sea bend to any master, and Ithacana, they'd see our people impoverished, starved, and broken before they'd ever allow trade to flow freely."
He dropped her hand.
"For generations, we've tried everything to make them see reason, to make them see the harm their greed causes, the innocent people of our lands. But the Ithacanians are not men, Laura. They are demons hiding in human form, which I'm afraid you'll find out soon enough."
Watching her father depart the tent, the muscles of Laura's hands flexed, wanting to wrap themselves around weapons. Wanting to strike out, wanting to maim, wanting to kill. Not because of his words. Dire as her father's warning was, it was one she'd heard countless times before. No, it was the slump of his shoulders, the resignation in his tone, the hopelessness that briefly showed itself in his eyes. All signs that despite everything her father had put into this gambit, he didn't truly believe she'd succeed in her mission. As much as Laura detested being underestimated, she hated those who mattered to her being harmed even more. And with her sisters now free of their shackles, nothing mattered more to her than Maradrina. Ithacana would pay for its crimes against her people, and by the time she was through with its king, he'd do more than bend. He'd bleed. Another 4 nights of travel north saw the red sand dunes giving way to rolling hills, covered with dry brush and stubby trees, then craggy mountains that seemed to touch the sky. They followed narrow ravines, and slowly the climate began to shift. The endless brown dirt broken by patches of green and the occasional brilliant bloom of a flower. The dried creek bed they followed turned muddy, and several hours later the caravan was splashing through sluggish water, but beyond that, the earth was bone dry, harsh and seemingly unlivable. Men, women, and children stopped working in their dry fields to shield their eyes, watching the group pass. They were all skinny, wearing threadbare homespun clothes and wide-brimmed straw hats that shielded them from the ceaseless sun, surviving on the sparse crops and bony cattle they raised. There was no other choice for them. While in prior generations, families were able to earn enough at their trades to purchase meat and grain imported from Herondale through the bridge, Ithacana's rising taxes and tolls had changed that. Now only the wealthy could afford the goods, and the working class of Maradrina had been forced to abandon their trades for these dry fields in order to feed their children. Barely feed them, Laura amended, her chest clenched tight, as the children ran to line the caravan route, their ribs visibly protruding from beneath their tattered clothes.
God bless His Majesty, they shouted. God bless the princess!
Little girls ran alongside Saren's camel, reaching up to hand her braids of wildflowers, which Laura draped across her shoulders, then across the saddle when they grew too many. Saren gave her a sack of silver coins to disperse, and it was a struggle to keep her fingers steady as she pressed them into tiny hands. They learned her name soon enough, and as the muddy creek turned to crystal rapids racing down the slopes toward the sea, they shouted,
"Bless Princess Laura! Watch over our beautiful princess!"
But it was a growing chant of,
"Bless Laura, Maradrina's martyr,"
that turned her hands cold, that kept her awake long after Saren had finished his lessons each evening, then filled her head with nightmares when sleep finally took her. Dreams where she was trapped by taunting demons, where all her skills had failed her, where no matter what she did, she could not get free. Dreams where Maradrina burned. And every day they traveled closer. As the earth turned lush and moist, the caravan was joined by a larger contingent of soldiers, and Laura was moved from the camel to a blue carriage pulled by a team of white horses, their trappings decorated with the same silver coins as her father's horse. And with the soldiers came a whole retinue of servants dedicated to tending to Laura's every need, washing and scrubbing and polishing her as they traveled to Maradrina's capital city, Avencia. Their whispers filtered through her tent walls, that her father had kept the future bride of Ithacana hidden in the desert all these long years for her own safety, that she was a treasured daughter, born of a favored wife, hand-selected by him to unite the two kingdoms in peace, her charm and grace destined to see Ithacana favor Maradrina with all the benefits an ally should have, which would allow the kingdom to thrive once more. The very idea that Ithacana would concede so much was laughable, but Laura felt no amusement at their naivete, not as she took in the desperate hope in their eyes. Instead, she carefully stoked her fury, hiding it beneath gentle smiles and graceful waves from the open window of the carriage. It was a strength she needed, given that she'd heard the other whispers too. "Pity the poor little princess," the servants said with sorrow in their eyes. "What will become of her amongst those demons? How will she survive their brutality?"
"Are you afraid?"
Her father pulled the carriage curtains closed as they approached the outskirts of Vencia, much to Laura's dismay. It was the city of her birth, and she hadn't seen it since she had been taken from the confines of the harem and brought to the compound to begin her training at the age of 5. She turned to him. "I'd be a fool not to be afraid. If they discover I'm a spy, they'll kill me, and then cancel the trade concessions for spite." Her father pulled 2 knives encrusted with Maradrinian rubies from beneath his coat, handing them to her. Laura recognized them as the ceremonial weapons that Maradrinian women wore to indicate they were wed. They were supposed to be used by a husband in defense of his wife's honor, but typically, they were kept dull, decorative, useless. They're lovely. Thank you.
Look more closely.
Pulling them from their sheaths, Laura tested the edges and found them keen, but the balance was off. Then her father reached over and pressed one of the jewels, and the gold casement fell away to reveal a throwing knife. Laura smiled.
If they won't allow you to communicate with the outside world, you'll need to bide your time while you learn their secrets, then escape. Perhaps even fight your way free and return to us with what you've learned.
She nodded, flipping the blades back and forth to get the feel of them. There was no chance of her willingly returning to hand-deliver her invasion strategy. To do so would be a death wish. After learning her father's intention to kill her and her sisters at the dinner, Laura had had time to consider why her father wanted the daughters, not destined to be queen, killed.
It was more than a desire to keep his plot a secret until he'd succeeded in taking the bridge.
Her father wanted this plot kept secret forever. For if anyone learned of it, his ability to use his other living children as negotiating tools would be negated. No one would ever trust him, just like he'd never trust her. Which meant if Laura ever returned, successful or not, she too would be silenced. Her father interrupted her thoughts.
I was there when you girls had your first kills. Did you know?
The blades stilled in her hands, as Laura remembered. She and her sisters had been 16 when the line of chained men had been brought to the compound under Saren's watchful eye. They were raiders from Valcotta, who'd been captured and brought to test the mettle of Maradrina's warrior princesses.
Kill or be killed,
Master Eric had told them as they were pushed one by one into the fighting yard. Some of her sisters had hesitated and fallen beneath the raiders' desperate blows. Laura had not, but she would never forget the meaty thunk her blade had made as it had sunk into her opponent's throat from across the yard, the way he'd stared at her in astonishment before slowly collapsing onto the sand, his lifeblood pooling around him. I didn't know, she said.
Knives, as I recall, are your specialty.
Killing was her specialty. The carriage was rumbling over cobbled streets, the horse's hooves making sharp little sounds against the stone. Outside, Laura heard intermittent cheers, and flicking aside the curtain, she tried to smile at the filthy men and women lining the streets, their faces pale from hunger and illness. Worse were the children among them, eyes dull and hopeless, flies buzzing near their eyes and mouths.
Why don't you do something for them?
She demanded of her father, whose face was expressionless as he stared out the window. He turned his azure eyes on her.
Why else do you think I created you?
Then he reached into his pocket and gave her a handful of silver to toss from the window, which she did. She closed her eyes as her impoverished people fought each other for the gleaming metal. She would save them. She would wrest the bridge from Ithacana's control, and no Maradrinian would go hungry again. The horses slowed, making their way down the steep switchbacking streets to the harbor below, where the ship waited to take her to Ithacana. She tugged aside the curtain to get her first look at the sea, the scent of fish and brine on the air. There were whitecaps on the water, the rise and fall of the waves stealing her attention as her father plucked the knives from her hands to be returned when the time was right. The carriage pulled through a market that appeared nearly devoid of life, the stalls empty.
Where is everyone? She asked.
Her father's face was dark and unreadable.
Waiting for you to open the gates to Ithacana.
The carriage rolled into the harbor, then came to a stop. There was no ceremony as her father helped her out. The ship waiting for them, flying a flag of azure and silver. Maradrina's colors. He led her swiftly down the dock and up a gangplank onto the ship.
The crossing to Southwatch takes less than an hour. There are servants waiting to prepare you below.
Laura cast one backward glance at Vencia, at the sun burning hot and bright above it, then turned her sights on the clouds and mist and darkness that lay across the narrow strait before her. One kingdom to save. One kingdom to destroy. Laura stood on the deck of the ship, which lurched and bucked like a wild horse, digging her fingernails into the railing, fighting to keep the contents of her stomach from spilling out into the sea. To make matters worse, raised in the desert, she had never learned to swim, a weakness that had already begun to haunt her. Every time the ship keeled over in the heavy wind, her breath caught with a certainty they'd capsize and drown. The only thing that distracted her from visions of waves closing over her head were the more certain dangers facing her. By tonight, she'd be married. She'd be alone in a foreign kingdom with a reputation for the worst sort of cruelty. The wife of a young man who was lord over it all. This was the life she'd been protecting her sisters from, at the sacrifice of her own, and all of it for the sake of her people. But now the consequences of that choice were terrifyingly imminent. Clouds hung low over the white-capped sea, shifting and moving like sentient beasts, but through them, ever so faintly, she could make out the shadow of an island. Ithacana. Her father joined her at the railing.
Southwatch.
His travel-stained clothing had been replaced with a pristine white shirt and black coat, his polished sword hanging from a belt decorated with silver and turquoise discs.
He keeps a full garrison of soldiers there at all times, and they have catapults and other war machines trained on the ocean, ready to sink any who'd attempt to take the island. There are spikes set into the seafloor to spear any ship that manages to approach any point other than the pier, which is itself rigged with explosives, should they feel it has been compromised. The bridge cannot be taken at its mouth.
His jaw tightened.
It's been tried and tried.
Countless ships and thousands of men lost for every attempt. Laura knew the history of the war that had ended 15 years ago with Ithacana triumphant, but the specifics rose and fell in her mind like the waves on which the ship rode. Her knees were shaky, her whole body weak with seasickness.
You are the hope of our people, Laura. We need that bridge.
She was afraid if she opened her mouth, she'd spill whatever remained in her stomach overboard. So she only nodded once. The island was in full view now, twin peaks of stone festooned with lush vegetation rising out of the sea. At their base was a lone pier crusted with armaments, a cluster of unadorned stoned buildings, and beyond, a single road leading up to the yawning mouth of the bridge itself. Her father's sleeve brushed her wrist.
Don't for a heartbeat believe that I trust you. I saw what you did to your sisters, and while you might claim to have Maredrina foremost in your heart, I know you were motivated by the desire to save your own life.
If saving her own life had been what she'd cared about, she would have faked her own death. But Laura said nothing.
While your ruthlessness makes you desirable for this role, your lack of honor makes me question whether you'll put our people's lives above your own.
Grabbing her arms, he twisted her toward him, nothing on his face betraying that this was anything more than a conversation between loving father and daughter.
If you betray me, I will hunt you down, and what I will do to you will make you wish that you died alongside your sisters. If you fail in your task, I will do the same.
The sound of steel drums danced across the sea and into her ears, punctuated by the distant grumble of thunder. And what if I succeed? Her mouth tasted sour, and she turned her head away, taking in the hundreds of figures on the island waiting for the ship, waiting for her.
You'll be the savior of Maredrina. You'll be rewarded beyond your wildest dreams.
I want my freedom. Her tongue felt strangely thick as she spoke. I want to be left alone, to my devices, free to go wherever I choose, to do as I will. One silver eyebrow rose.
How different you and Marilyn are.
Were. He inclined his head.
Even so.
Do we have an agreement, then? The bridge, in exchange for my freedom? His nod was punctuated by a loud boom of thunder. It was a lie, and she knew it. But she could live with his lies because their goals were aligned.
Drop sails! The captain of the ship bellowed, and Laura gripped the rail as they lost momentum, the sailors running about to make ready to land.
The drums continued their beat, pace escalating along with Laura's heart as the ship drifted against the empty pier, sailors leaping the gap to tie off the ship. The gangplank was lowered, and her father took her arm, leading her toward it. The drumming intensified.
You have 1 year.
He stepped onto the solid stone of the pier.
Do not falter. Do not fail.
Laura hesitated, dizzy, and for the first time since the night she'd freed her sisters from their dark fate, desperately afraid. Then she took her first step into the world that was now her new home. The drums let out a thundering beat, then went still. Holding tight to her father's arm, Laura walked next to him up the pier, biting back a gasp as she took in the masked Ithaconians for the first time. Their steel helmets were sculpted like raging beasts, mouths full of snarling teeth and brows bearing curved horns. She could see nothing of the men beneath, except their eyes, which seemed to glitter with malice as they watched her pass, hands on swords and pikes. No one spoke. The only sounds, the whistle of the wind between the two towers of rock, and the call of the storm beyond. Tearing her eyes from the soldiers, Laura's gaze went down the paved road, rising up to the gaping mouth of Ithacana's bridge. It was enclosed like a tunnel, maybe a dozen feet wide and equally as tall, made of gray stone, gone green with exposure to the damp air. A great steel portcullis stood open, the entirety of the bridge's mouth framed by a guardhouse. A figure stepped out of the dark opening, the steel spikes of the portcullis hanging above him like fangs, and Laura felt her stomach lurch. The king of Ithacana. Dressed in trousers, heavy boots, and a tunic of drab greenish-gray, he was tall and broad of shoulder, her training telling her that he was as much a soldier as any of those lining the road. But those details were lost. Her heart beating staccato as she took in the helmet that concealed his face. It had a snout like a lion's, open to reveal glittering canines and horns like a bull sprouting from both temples. Not a man, a demon. The lingering dizziness from the voyage passed over her in waves, and with it came fear that possessed her like an angry spirit. The heel of her sandal slid on the stone, and Laura stumbled against her father, the ground feeling as though it were moving beneath her like a rocking deck of a ship. This had been a mistake, a terrible, horrible mistake. When only a handful of paces stood between them, her father stopped and turned to her. In his free hand was a jeweled belt with her camouflaged throwing knives hooked on either side. He wrapped it around the waist of her sodden gown, fastening the buckle. Then he kissed both her cheeks before turning back to Ithacana's king.
As was agreed upon, I stand here to offer my most precious daughter, Laura, as a symbol of Moradrina's commitment to its continued alliance with Ithacana. May there ever be peace between our kingdoms.
The king of Ithacana nodded once, and her father gave Laura a gentle shove between the shoulders. With halting steps, she walked toward the king, and as she did, a bolt of lightning lanced through the air, the flash making the visage of his helmet seem to move, like it wasn't metal, but flesh. The drums resumed, a steady and harsh beat, Ithacana incarnate. The king reached out one hand, and though every instinct told her to turn and run, Laura took it. For reasons she couldn't articulate, she'd expected it to be cold like metal, and equally unyielding, but it was warm. Long fingers curved around hers, the nails cut short. The palms were calloused, the skin like hers covered with tiny white scars. The nicks and cuts that couldn't be avoided when combat was one's way of life. She stared at that hand. It offered some strange comfort. What stood before her was nothing more than a man. And men could be defeated. A priestess approached on her left and tied an azure ribbon around their hands, binding them together before belting out the Moradrinian marriage vows so that all could hear over the growing storm. Vows of obedience on her part. Vows to create 100 sons on his. Laura could have sworn she heard a soft snort of amusement from behind the king's helmet. But as the priestess raised her hands to proclaim them man and wife, he spoke for the first time.
Not yet.
Waving away the startled priestess, he shook loose the ribbon that Laura was supposed to have worn braided into her hair for the first year of their marriage, the silk flying off toward the sea. One of his helmeted soldiers stepped out of the ranks, coming up to stand before them. He shouted,
"Do you, Oren Kurtel, King of Ithacana, swear to fight by this woman's side, to defend her to your dying breath, to cherish her body and none other, and to be loyal to her as long as you both live?"
"I do."
The king's words were punctuated by the hammer of 100 swords and spears against shields, and Laura twitched. But the shock of the noise was nothing compared to the soldier turning to her and saying,
"Do you, Laura Veliant, Princess of Madrina, swear to fight by this man's side, to defend him to your dying breath, to cherish his body and none other, and to be loyal to him as long as you both live?"
She blinked. And because there was nothing else for her to say, she whispered, "I do." Nodding, the soldier pulled out a knife.
"Now don't be a baby about this, Majesty."
The king held out his hand. The soldier sliced the knife across the king's palm. Then before Laura could pull away, he grabbed her arm and ran the knife across her hand as well. She saw the blood well up before she felt the sting. And then the soldier pressed their palms together. The king of Ithacana's hot blood mixing with hers before running down their entwined fingers. The soldier jerked their hands up, almost lifting Laura off her feet.
"Behold, the king and queen of Ithacana!"
As if to punctuate his words, the storm finally fell upon them with a resounding clap of thunder that made the ground shudder. The drums took up their frenzied pace, and the king of Ithacana pulled their hands out of the soldier's grip, lowering his arms so Laura wasn't on her tiptoes.
"I suggest you board your ship, your grace," he said to Laura's father. "The storm will chase you home as it is."
"You could always offer your hospitality," her father responded, and Laura's attention flicked from him to Saren,
who stood with the rest of the Moradrinians beyond.
"We are, after all, family now."
"One step at a time, Silas. One step at a time."
He turned and gently tugged Laura into the depths of the bridge, the portcullis rattling its way down behind them. She had only the opportunity for a brief glance back over her shoulder at her father, his expression blank and unreadable. But beyond, Saren met her gaze, inclining his head once in a slow nod before she was pulled from sight. It was dark inside, smelling faintly of animal dung and sweat. None of the Ithacanians removed their helmets, but even with their faces concealed, Laura felt their scrutiny.
"Welcome to Ithacana, the king," her husband said. "I'm sorry to have to do this."
Laura saw him lift a hand holding a vial. She could have dodged it. She could have taken him down with a single blow, fought her way free of his soldiers. But she couldn't let him know that. Instead, she gave him a doe-eyed look of shock as he held it up to her nose, the world spinning around her, darkness rushing in. Her knees buckled and she felt strong arms catch her before she hit the ground. The last thing she heard before she faded from consciousness was the king's voice.
What have I gotten myself into with you?
Auron